Moncrief on News Talk.
Because it's Eurovision week, Henry McKean is in Malmo, or Malma, as they say over there. But while there, he's found time to do a bit of eating for us. He's been to visit the disgusting food museum, having doused himself with Bisodol and Imodium. He's ready to talk about it. Afternoon, Henry.
Good afternoon, and a big hello from Malmö, as you said, Malmö calling. And to think that I was about to read a news bulletin, it would have been nothing but Eurovision. That would have been no other news.
I do want to ask you about how things are there. Maybe we'll talk about that in a while, but how's your stomach?
Yeah, well, it's not great. And I am a little bit nervous about tonight. And it's not because, you know, hopefully we get through. It's because of what I went through. And the founders of this museum say that it's basically about, you know, being curious about exotic cultures and being fascinated with them and how unfamiliar foods can actually be delicious, or perhaps they can be horrible, or it can be an acquired taste. For example, I love Marmite. I think I'm the only person I know that loves Marmite. And it's about the cultural differences and basically breaking down boundaries and how food can connect us. And sharing a meal, they say, can turn strangers into friends. I met one of the founders who explained his thinking behind the museum.
My name is Andreas Arens, and I am the museum director of the Disgusting Food Museum in Malmö, Sweden.
So we're here in Malmö. That's the proper pronunciation, not Malmö. Malmö. We're here Malmö, in the... Yeah. How do you say it?
Malmö.
Malmö.
Correct.
So it's not Malmö, it's Malmö.
Yeah, it's the Swedish letter Ö. It depends a little bit on where you are in Sweden, but here in Malmö, that's the way you say it, Malmö.
Because you've got the dots on top, that gives it the Ö.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it started with me and my co-founder Samuel. We had been traveling all over the world, eating kind of, well, quote-unquote disgusting foods that we realized were quite normal. If you just give them a chance, if you try them, they are all delicious. It's just that we are conditioned by our cultures to like certain things and therefore to not like other things. Because disgust is a universal emotion that is there to protect us from eating something that could kill us, basically.
And that's the thing, it's built into us. If we get a feeling that perhaps the chicken has gone off, if we get a feeling that this isn't right, our bodies reject it, we vomit. And you've actually given me an admission ticket here, but it's more than a ticket, isn't it?
It is a ticket and a vomit bag combined, one and two in one, kind of, yeah? Because it does happen every now and then. We've had 439 vomits in 5.5 years. We do have a vomit counter just behind the tasting bar, so we can reset it anytime anyone vomits.
I've had lunch. Was that a bad idea?
Well, as long as you haven't had too much, you should be fine. If you need more than one bag, I can provide that as well. The record is 11 vomits from the same person. You can expect to first look at certain things, foods from around the world, things that are normal, where they come from. You go around smelling certain things, fermented herring and things like that. And in the end is the most fun part, which is tasting, which is what you're going to do in a little while, where you can try 25 different things. And if you try every single one, you can buy a t-shirt that says I tasted everything.
Right. You get a t-shirt as well. A puke-stained t-shirt.
Vomit everywhere, projectile, all over the place.
Were there many, when you were in there, are there many people in, walking around, stuffing their face with disgusting things?
Yeah, this is the interesting thing. It was, absolutely, it is quite busy. And I know, obviously, a lot of them are coming in from, Eurovision. But there's visitors and locals, they seem to love it. I actually had a starter, because obviously it was a full meal. I had a starter and... you know, I never really think these things through, Sean, when I agree to do these things. But we start with dead ants.
We start off quite easily with some black ants. These are quite a nice type of insect because they taste a little bit like some acidity, some saltiness. So just hold out your hand.
So you want me to eat black
Absolutely.
Ants?
Absolutely. Yeah, black ants.
Are you for real?
I'll eat with you as well.
Will I not get sick?
Most likely not.
Will I not, like, perhaps die a slow death?
If you would have, I would have died a long time ago. I've had probably 100,000 of these ants.
You want me to eat dead ants?
Absolutely. Would you prefer live ants?
Okay, right. I don't know how I signed up to this, Andres. Okay, so I'm just going to swallow them?
Yeah, just chew them.
And we've got the vomit bag ready. Okay, here we go. We're eating some ants. Oh, okay, here we go. Oh my goodness me. How do I get myself into these situations? Okay. Oh, yep. It tastes like salty.
Salty and sour, right?
Salty burnt. I'm crunching on the shells now.
Yeah, they're quite nice on a sorbet. Adds a bit of sourness and some saltiness. It's really nice.
But it feels so unnatural eating dead black ants.
That's just your mind trying to protect you because you're not used to it, right? Disgust, as we talked about, it's there to protect you from dying. So your brain is telling you, don't eat this, you're going to die, which is normal, which is a natural reaction.
You know, I think I've got full travel insurance. Will I have to go to a local hospital and have my stomach pumped?
You'll be fine. That was just the start. We're going to have a couple of more things. That was a nice little warm-up.
A nice little warm-up. So, describe the taste of a dead ant, Henry. Well, as you know, he's in Malmö or Malmö. It's like if James Brown was asked to pronounce Malmö. Malmö! Right, so anyway, he's back. Henry, you're back.
Ah, Sean, can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Yes, you're all loud and clear. That's a relief.
They were the ants. They were the dead ants getting inside.
There's dead ants inside all your equipment. Did you, describe the taste of dead ants? Because presumably you had to take a mouthful of them because individually you probably couldn't even detect anything.
They're very, very small. They reminded me a little bit of really, really tiny bits of M&Ms crunched up, or maybe Smarties. Oh. And they had this weird scaly feel. They were crunchy, really kind of crunchy, but then bits would get stuck in your teeth.
Yeah.
And then you had to just imagine that you weren't eating crunched up ants, and you could see their legs. The texture was kind of sharp. It was like putting pins and needles inside your mouth. It wasn't a disgusting flavor. It was like a sort of perhaps a peanut, a horrible peanut. It wasn't the worst of flavors. It was a little bit sharp. There was a sharp taste, and it felt unnatural. There was something unnatural about it.
Did they cook? Did they boil them or anything beforehand, or were these raw ants?
They're basically raw. They're dried out. So I suppose they dried them. They put them through a drying process. But they had, you know, they would have still had their brains inside and you know, their veins, their little ant veins, their little feet, the lot.
Oh, I didn't know that they even had veins, ants. I don't know why. I just never considered the physiology of an ant.
Like a tiny, tiny little vein, small little vein, lots of them.
And was the point here that, like, they say right here, have a big handful of dead ants, and that is this normal food in Sweden or in any part of the world?
Well, I mean, it's from all different parts of the world. And remember, you know, when things were bad, when our ancestors struggled, like I remember being out in Southeast Asia. I this is terrible to admit. It was some years ago now. It was not that it makes any better. I did eat a bit of a rat. I bit into a rat and it was barbecued. So it depends on the background you're from. And I'm just trying to remember the flavor. It just tasted a bit like chicken. You know, not...
That's what they say about everything, I suppose, really.
Well, I think it's a cultural thing in different parts of the country. And again, like, sure, our ancestors ate anything they could get their hands on.
Well, it's true.
You know, when we were cavemen, anything we could eat. And even if we take sweets, gelatine is what crushed up bones. And I think at one point they came from Wales, as in the ones in the sea, not the country. But I did actually get to also try Dorian fruit from Southeast Asia. This gives people intense disgust or deep appreciation.
Next up, we have my favorite fruit, durian fruit. So it will be very stinky. Make sure you smell it first.
Okay, so where is this from?
This is from Southeast Asia. This has been grown in Thailand specifically, but all over Southeast Asia people eat this, and it's one of my favorite fruits.
And what's the fruit called again?
Durian.
Okay, let's try this.
It's a little bit like mango, a little bit like onion.
Ooh.
Like a stinky mango onion, yeah?
That is not natural.
Well, it is natural. This is the natural taste of durian, but I know what you mean. You're not used to it.
I feel like you've just given me some really gone-off onion that we found in the bin.
No, it's actually it's called the king of fruits. It is quite loved in Southeast Asia. It is one of the most expensive fruits in the world and quite highly sought after, hard to get, and in my opinion, amazing.
Mm, yeah, but it's really stinky. That's the problem with it, isn't it? That like people go to smell it when it blooms, and it's just to experience the vileness of that smell. Could you get much of a whiff off it, Henry?
I did. I mean, as soon as you walk in the door of the museum, there's this whiff, this kind of soury, horrible smell, and you think, is the sewer? Something happened? Did a Eurovision fan use the bathroom? We're mentioning Bambi Thug. She did become unwell with shellfish. So absolutely, overpowering. And I mean, this meal, this continuous meal of disgusting food continues, Sean. And we move on to the traditional Swedish fish.
Mm.
This is fermented herring, classical northern Swedish thing.
I hate fish.
Well, if you don't like fish normally, this will be terrible. This is the thing that causes the most number of vomits in a museum. You'll probably be fine.
I'm just getting the sick bag ready. Here we
just
go.
Open it up just in case, yeah?
Right, okay, so what's this one called again?
Surströmming.
Surströmming.
That's good.
And what does that mean in English?
It's basically sour herring, fermented herring.
Okay, so this is, I'm smelling it now. It smells like a men's changing room of maybe an old 1980s football club before ventilation.
It does smell bad. The taste is much better. I wouldn't say delicious, but much, much better. It tastes a bit salty, fishy, like a normal herring that you just poured a whole load of salt on.
Andreas, this is a delicacy in Sweden. You like this stuff.
I'm personally allergic to fish, but I have tried it. Everyone who works here, I've tried everything. But I had to go to the hospital to get my stomach pumped afterwards, though.
You did?
But any fish would be the same for me.
Okay, so you're not just allergic to this?
Any fish.
Okay, well, let's just hope I don't have to go to hospital. So I'm going to try this. How do you pronounce it again?
Surströmming.
All right, here we go. Surströmming. All right, let's put this herring that's been fermented for how long?
About 6 months or so.
Surströmming. Here we go. And I don't like fish. And if I get sick, I'm sorry. I've got a sick bag just here.
You have a vomit bag.
Here we go. I'm delaying now. Here we go. One, two. Oh, my God.
You look like you absolutely love it, yeah?
Oh. I just ate a sock. It's like a smelly sock. I've just eaten a sock. Oh, my God. I'm going to get some water. Hang on. I feel like I'm now a fish and I'm under the sea. That was repulsive.
It is quite strong, taste-wise, smell-wise. It doesn't necessarily taste bad, but it is an unusual smell. It is a very fermented smell as well.
Can I stop, or do we have to keep trying how many different items of food?
We have at least one more for you.
Oh,
normally
geez.
25, but you know.
Right, that was a fermented herring. Probably most people have heard of this before, and I don't want to be conspiracy theorist, but I suspect that the Swedes don't like this stuff at all. And that actually, it's just a huge joke they're playing on the rest of the world, that tourists come in and they give them fermented herring and they go, oh, no, we totally like that. A bit like Andreas there. Suddenly he's allergic to fish. I don't know about that. Someone says, if Henry has to go in to A&E, it would only cost him about 300 Swedish kronor, and he'll be seen almost immediately. Not like Ireland. Someone else says, I ate badger rump in Moldova. It was good. Like calamari and venison combined. That's an odd combination, but okay if you enjoyed it. Dan wonders, would chocolate-covered ants be a lot better, like raisins? Well, Henry did say that the thing is, though, when Henry was describing it there, it was kind of all the little bits and all the rest of it. And Henry did say he'd eaten rat once and it tasted like chicken. And someone says, except carrots. Carrots don't taste like chicken. That's a very good point, indeed. So There were, as you said, Henry, it was fairly crowded there. And were other people that you met there, were they all guzzling down this stuff with gusto? Did you meet anyone who liked any of this stuff?
Well, this is the interesting thing. I mean, there were lots of visitors, lots of Eurovision fans. All of them were there from around the world. And I asked them what they thought.
It's pretty cool. Pretty cool exhibition. Love a museum, and I think they've done an interesting take on it. I'm a bit apprehensive about getting around to the bit where you get to taste the food. A little bit nervous, but thank God they've given me a little sick bag on entry.
You're from Latvia. You just ate something there. What did you try?
Yeah, I tried almost everything except two hottest sauces. Actually, I found everything was really tasteful. Yeah. Very good. I found my new favorite cheese, actually. Ants and bugs are very tasty. And I don't see anything disgusting, actually, here.
You
should try some Latvian food, and then you will see what's disgusting.
I can say this. You're sweating a little bit. Is that from the food being a little bit toxic?
No, that of the bomb, one of the hottest sauces in the world.
You just tried that?
Yeah. Yeah, my tongue hurts a bit.
Wow, you are braver than me.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
You should try the first ones.
Oh, God, no. I have to get through the day.
Okay.
You've got to get a Eurovision to get through.
Yeah.
You're not going to have to go to hospital.
No. It's really, really good. It's really good, yeah. I love it. My favorite museum in the world, probably.
You're from Scotland. I like haggis. Some people would say it's disgusting. What do you think of this disgusting food museum?
It's just really fun and interesting. It's a bit different.
And have you tried the food?
No.
Are you going to?
Definitely not.
Definitely not. You're not going to go near it.
I'm not.
I don't feel like we've worked up an appetite here, that's for sure.
You're from Melbourne, Australia. What do you think of the disgusting food museum? For example, we're looking at a snake here, a distilled rice wine snake. Would you try that?
No, but I'm outraged that Vegemite and Mustics are here.
Vegemite is described as disgusting.
Not for us.
Well, it's kind of like a poor quality Marmite.
Oh,
that's fighting words.
Don't fight us. I actually grew up on both, so I've got feet in both camps for that.
So you're enjoying the experience. Have you tried the food yet?
I'm a pescatarian, so if anything, I'm going to check the cheese, and that's about it.
I'm going to try a few, yeah, for sure.
Right. Okay. Well, they're kind of a game there, at least. Someone says, "Can we start an Irish equivalent to smelly, horrible foods to see if tourists will just leave a bin outside a pub and see will anyone eat that?" I ate a guinea pig in Peru, not much flesh, and overpowered by the herbs it was stuffed with. Would not eat it again, but at least it wasn't locusts or snake blood. Says Amanda, and somebody else says, "I lived in Thailand for a year, and there were signs outside public transport stations saying that durian flute is not allowed. You're not allowed to come in with it because of the smell," which makes perfect sense. "We need to switch from beef to bugs to stop climate change. So get used to it, everybody. Ooh, that'll be a bit of a transfer." I was in Singapore once and I drank a wine which was fermented from deer's penis.
Wow. Was it good? Was it nice?
No, it was disgusting. It was supposed to be an aphrodisiac. And I didn't have sex again for about a year and a half. Just about the thought of it.
So did they crunch up the penis, or
no? There wasn't like bits of penis in there. No, but it was kind of, it was very tart and it was like medicine of some sort. The most disgusting medicine you could think of. That's what it it was kind of roseate color. It was only a small glass, but oh my God, it was vile.
No, because I was going to ask you, you know, was there a hardness to the taste? But then.
No, not at first, or even afterwards, Henry.
Yeah. Oh, that's
must be said. So, you were going to end your repast with something sweet. Now, was it actually sweet?
Well, this is it. I was given licorice, and you'd think that licorice was quite normal, but it was sweet and sour. This intensity, an unbelievable, disgusting licorice, the worst licorice I've ever had. Obviously, the Scandinavians love their licorice, but they've even got licorice ice cream, and you can even get a black cone in a normal shop, not in this museum. We start by asking about people, do they come to the disgusting food museum for lunch?
It doesn't happen very often. Actually, if you come here, you might lose your appetite and save a bit of money on lunch.
Andreas, you're going to offer me something else. What's this here?
Hold out your hand like this. There we go. So here we have salty licorice, saltlakris. This one is from Iceland. It's called Licorice Devils. It is a classical Swedish, Scandinavian, Dutch as well. Six countries in the world love salt licorice. The rest of the world thinks we are crazy for eating this. I love it.
Okay, here we go. Here is some salt licorice. What is the catch? How disgusting is this?
To me, it's amazing. To you, it is mostly just the saltiness. It's mostly the feeling of how can this be a candy? How can people actually love this?
Okay, so one, two, and go. That is the worst thing you've given me all day. Yuck.
A lot of people think so, and a lot of people are wrong. This is amazing.
It's like an explosion of sharp vinegar mixed in with sugar and salt. And it's making me burp. Will it give me diarrhea?
No. If you eat a lot of them, which I'm guessing you will not, you will get a little bit of an elevated blood pressure. But having just one, you will be absolutely fine. So for me, this is the best thing. I love salt licorice.
So you have no problem eating that?
It's so good. This is the best candy in the world.
It's just so strong. I mean, it was worse than the fish. And
to
that's
a lot
saying
of people
a lot.
It is. To a lot of people, it is. And for me, it's the best thing in here.
Ooh.
So good.
Oh my God, I have to stop now. Thank you so much for inviting me to the Disgusting Food Museum here in Sweden in Malmo on the eve of Eurovision. This is yuck.
Yeah, yuck. That actually sounds the worst. You could kind of have an expectation almost of what a dead ant or a pickled herring might taste like, but ooh, salty sweet licorice is yuck. So what's the in Malmo, what's the feeling like around Bambi? Is there like, I mean, obviously the Irish camp will be talking it up, Henry, but other than that, or how are people viewing our chances?
Well, this is it. Bambi Thug will more than likely, it looks like, go through to the final, according to the experts. Could even become fifth in the overall finals on Saturday. And obviously, being Eurovision, it's always a little bit political, and there are protests planned for tomorrow as well as Thursday. Thursday is when Israel are performing in the second semi-final, and Saturday, and the Swedish do show quite a lot of solidarity to the people of Palestine. So yeah, there are protests, but most of the acts are just trying to get on with it. They're trying to make it non-political, but the thing is, it's always going to be political. And they're saying it's all about the music, united by music, or you could say sometimes it's disunited by music. So most fans are just trying to enjoy themselves, but it's there, it's in the background. I mean, people are talking about it. People are talking about the boycott. People are talking about whether or not the EBU could have done more to ask Israel not to be in it. So yeah, it's definitely a talking point, and it's a concern for everybody here.
Yeah, and is there are they keeping any protests that have occurred so far, or will occur? Have they kind of corralled that off from where the actual singing will take place?
That is a really good question. So the protests that we've heard about, that we know about, are going to take place in the city centre, in the pedestrianised areas. And I'm sure there will be one or two as well outside the arena as well, especially on Thursday when Israel performs. But it's hard to say how it will go, how it will pan out. And we also understand, to stop people rushing the stage, I was at rehearsals, and they've got so many security, so much security. There's no way you'll be able to gate crash. And not that I would ever think of doing something like that. They've got a huge amount of security. There's a lot of police. There's a lot of fire brigade. Yesterday, for example, they closed off a train station because of an incident. We're not sure exactly what happened, but they're quite responsive. And also, they've recorded everything in advance. So if something does happen, they can go to the pre-recorded version, which is identical to the live version. So that at home, you might not know if something's gone wrong, because they'll just be playing a tape that's going out at the exact same time as the live version. Oh, almost that, like Top of the Pops in the 80s.
Yeah, oh, that's interesting, because one can't help but wonder that on the second semi-final, when Israel performs, if there's booing or just silence and no applause or very little applause, how will the broadcasters deal with that? Or will they let that go out as it is?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like at the rehearsals, there was massive cheering, and sometimes you think, is that piped cheering? Because there wasn't that many people in the room. But no, it's a fair comment. And I know I was speaking to an Israeli TV journalist earlier on the Pat Kenny show, and a lot of the acts just on the black carpet, not the red carpet, but the black carpet, ignored him and wouldn't stop. So I know Bambi's talked about it too, and there's this document that many, many artists, including Ollie Alexander, representing the UK, have signed, where they're basically saying, showing solidarity, but we're marching on and we're going ahead with Eurovision. I think that's the main feeling. Solidarity, but we're going ahead anyway.
Okay, we shall see. Thanks a million, Henry.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.